Okay.
There was a hashtag on Twitter that was trending, I guess, maybe yesterday, that was make a band less interesting. Like, I always like those. I think that, like, that's the flavor of Twitter I
just
appreciate.
Like,
yeah.
By changing the name or changing personnel? Or
yeah, yeah. So it's like one of the entries, somebody suggested write a strongly worded letter against the machine. Yeah, that was the,
that's good.
Yeah. That's way more interesting,
yeah.
Actually.
Yeah, Steely Pan was another one that was put out there. So there's a, yeah, there are a lot of puns that end up cropping up.
Of course,
so
you were drawn.
So I appreciate. Yeah, I was. You know, let us look beyond that. The but also some stuff that was pretty funny. So I would say if you are listening and you're also familiar with the Twitter. Go check out the Make a Band Less Interesting hashtag. It's my little PSA for the start of the show.
When you said just now, when you said there was, like, for some reason my brain filled it in, like, there once was a something like that. Like you were going to be a minstrel for a second.
Oh, no. Yeah, there'll be no limericks. I'm not going to, there'll be no
minstreling.
Well,
I don't know. I mean, you've already punned it, so.
Are we going to do pub chants or are we going to play some theme music?
What is pub chant? What is that?
That's where you like loft your beer to and fro.
Is that like a I get knocked down? Irish, is that a tub something?
Like drinking
thing?
Songs? I don't know, man.
Okay, fine. I'm Shane.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Kevin.
I'm Mark.
Somebody likes it.
Today, I think it's today, is the 2-year anniversary of Bowie's passing.
Yeah, I think your wife posted about that on Facebook.
Yeah.
She was all bummed out. Well, I guess she didn't go visit the trophy with you.
She did go visit the trophy
with
me.
Oh, did she?
Me.
All right.
Yeah.
Well, good for her to get out of the house.
I think it was as much about needing coffee as it was about hearkening back to Mr. Bowie. But she did listen to a lot of Bowie around the house. So
well, you could do far worse.
Anyway, yeah. So... 2 years gone, the extra thin Duke, however that works. But
very thin at this
yes,
point.
Yes.
Jeez.
Two-dimensional.
Did you guys see that Radiohead suing Lana Del Rey?
That was
well,
the other thing. Well,
they're not
talking.
They're not suing
they're,
Lana
they're
Del
in
Rey.
Discussion.
They well, and they released a statement yesterday that said that not only are they not pursuing her for... they're not... suing her as at this point they've never she put on her Twitter or whatever that they've been asking only for 100% of the royalties and they
and
said
yeah and she offered like 40% or
something yeah but the statement that was released yesterday their spokesperson said they have never at any point asked for only 100%.
Well, the song in question, so here's the irony, the song in question is Creep, which they got sued by
the Hollies.
Well, the writers of the song were Albert Hammond Sr., a father of Albert Hammond Jr. of the Strokes, and some other guy that I didn't recognize.
Yeah, let's just say the Hollies.
Yeah, but it was the songwriters who actually sued them, and they settled with them, and then turned around and are threatening legal action with Lana Del Rey.
Well, okay, so. But okay, what you're doing right now is that and what everyone's been doing that you know, like they put out a statement that said blah 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 whatever it said, but this all comes from one tweet that Lana Del Rey put out, all of this like outrage and outcry, like nobody really knows.
Well, and she's a little suspect.
Yeah, but no, anybody that takes to Twitter, in my opinion, is a little suspect.
Oh, hey, you know? Hey,
well, not
hey, sir.
Like no, just to state shit without it corroborated, you know, like it comes from the top down, the fish rots from the head, but you know, like whatever. People that just take to you can't like whatever headlines or whatever were taken from like Lana Del Rey's one tweet that she could have like been drunk or whatever when she sent. Who knows? If my point is like no actual
well,
information.
She has been known to display some erratic behavior.
Everybody's been known to display some erratic behavior on social media.
I would like to just state for the record that I think when all of the dust settles, we'll realize that all of the money should be going to Marvin Gaye's estate. So as long as...
Certainly.
That's good.
Yeah.
And you have like a sharp legal mind.
Oh, no, it's nothing but books up here. That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah.
And clearly some dust. So...
All right, you guys want to talk about a record?
Yeah, sure.
All right, so I couldn't find the record that I wanted to. Well, I can't.
Yeah, this doesn't sound like Texas outlaw country at all.
Okay, so let me say this. Like,
well, the outlaw part, baby.
Yes. If one were to drive, I don't know, from Austin to San Antonio, and then like pull off the road somewhere outside of New Braunfels and go into a truck stop and pee, on the way out, they had like a dollar cutout bin, you would be able to find the album that I wanted us to listen to this week in that dollar
That's
cutout bin.
That's a really specific thing to task our listeners with having to do to follow along.
What I'm saying, bear with me. What I'm saying is, you could find it in the bargain CD bin at a truck stop, but you can't find it on Spotify or YouTube or anywhere else on the internet.
You're talking about what you wanted.
What
to,
I wanted yeah. to play.
Okay. Well, save it.
So, no. I haven't let go of the dream yet.
Okay.
Because it's going to be fun to talk about if I eventually can make it happen.
Okay.
But I've wanted to talk about this band for a while, Guns N' Roses. And initially, what I wanted to do was pick one of the Use Your Illusion albums because I don't know them as well as I do the album that I ended up picking. However, when I went to see, I was like, well, which album has fewer songs that I know on that double album, Use Your Illusion 1 or 2? Use Your Illusion 1 or Use Your Illusion 2? I don't know. There's November Rain, some other fucking shit songs. But each one...
I think Civil War is on one of those.
Okay, maybe. Well, it's irrelevant. They're bad songs. But I felt like torturing everybody a little bit because I couldn't get what I wanted. However, each of those albums, each one, 1 and 2, were 75 plus minutes long. And I'm not going to do that to anybody. I'm mean, but I'm not that fucking mean, dude. I'm not going to make you sit and listen to Axl Rose's bloated head for 75 minutes. So
thanks for that.
You're welcome. That is, and see, that's mercy right there.
Is it?
It. Oh, you want to? Because I'll
don't
pick one.
Challenge him.
I'll Kevin. Pick one of those motherfuckers next don't, time I have.
I mean, you can.
Okay, so what? Oh, like all of a sudden, Kevin's like a 16-year-old. Like, you're not my real dad. You can.
Well, you're the one. The thing that you neglect to mention in your massive send up of why we're not listening to another record is that A, you still have more records you could pick, and B, you have to listen to it too. So,
oh no, I know, but I'm fine with that. Okay, I'm fine with going through it once. It doesn't pain me as much. So anyway,
Have we mentioned which one you eventually?
We have not. So Appetite for Destruction is the one that I picked, and it, for a lot of different reasons. And Mark, you texted a little bit about this yesterday or day before. And I want to get to that, and I want to get to a lot of this, but there are funny things to talk about this record, there's serious things to talk about this record, and there's interesting things to talk about this record. Like, so I don't know really necessarily how to kick it off other than...
What are we going to do for the other 50 minutes of the podcast?
What do you mean?
Nothing.
Oh, like this, I'm saying there's serious things, or there's... Oh,
I'm just saying that I think we can get through all of that pretty quickly.
Well, I don't necessarily know because to my surprise, I actually somewhat liked this record.
Well, Mark, okay, so Mark on our group thread said something derisive about like having heard the stuff between the singles and like. You know, like you can tell that he's just rolling his eyes. And there are a couple songs on here that I think are fucking dogs.
Me too.
But
there's some
but
dogs.
But listening to this record in context with what was super popular, it's a really fucking good album, like for that genre.
I actually agree a lot about that. I was really surprised in a couple of different ways. Okay, like let's face facts right off the bat. Axl Rose's voice is annoying as fuck. In a lot of ways.
It's an acquired taste.
Okay.
It doesn't annoy me, but I can definitely see how it would annoy somebody.
Sometimes it doesn't annoy me, but it's pretty annoying. Also, he might, in certain songs, give Noel Gallagher a run for his money. Like...
What? Stupid
for
lyrics?
Most annoying
or what do you mean?
Like,
yeah.
Stupid nonsense lyrics?
Yes, sure. Like, yeah, like...
Multiple categories?
No, I mean, there's nothing... There's no... There's no way that I would compare Axl Rose and Noel Gallagher. I mean, other than hubris.
That's what I meant. There's a little bit of an onion there. There are a few things you could talk about.
No, I get what you're saying. I'm talking about, and we'll go ahead and read at some point during this broadcast. We'll read the lyrics to "Sweet Child of Mine," and see if
those are Gallagher-esque.
Gallagher-esque? I think he fucking taught Noel Gallagher that. Well, no, at least with "Sweet Child of Mine," which definitely top five worst lyrics of a number one song that I've ever heard. At least they're coherent in a way that Noel Gallagher's at his dumbest.
Slowly walking down the hall faster than a cannonball.
But not even that. Like, there's lots of question marks. Like, yeah. So I was okay. There's shitty drumming on it. There's way too much. Can there be cowbell on it? Like, I think that's the genesis of fucking, I need more cowbell. There's cowbell on like every goddamn song. But Slash, I know his name is Slash. His guitar sounds amazing. There's some
He's a badass.
There's some
hooks. You know, he and Lenny Kravitz were like best buds in high school, too.
I'm not surprised to hear that.
Yeah, like two mixed race guys that play guitar in L.A.
And that can write hooks like a motherfucker. Look, we'll get through this, like the fact that look, I don't love this record, but it is undeniable that there are some fucking hooks on it. And also, in 1987, can you imagine like a number one multi-platinum selling album? Like the song "Mr. Brownstone" is about fucking waking up and scoring heroin and shooting heroin. The chorus is, "I used to do a little and the little wouldn't do it, so a little got more and more." I mean, like, that's
wow.
Yeah, see, there's the caveat to everything that's good about this record. Like, there's some interesting, you feel like they lived it. You know, like Night Train, it's about
drinking
cheap wine.
Dude, I was trying to find it to send to you guys. Like, years ago, I read an article, I think it was in Playboy. They do have articles. It's true.
I've heard that.
Yeah.
Anyway,
it was about the early years of Guns N' Roses, like before, you know, they became, you know, the known entity that they were. And like, they fucking lived the rock and roll cliche lifestyle, like hardcore, a bunch of them all in the same shitty room and like banging girls left and right and getting wasted constantly. And I mean, they did it. And it's
kind of dangerous music in a way that easily got. I mean, it kind of is the weird missing link in a way between Poison and Nirvana. Like, it's
well, okay. So I also, and keep in mind, like, I was like 14, 15 years old when this record was coming on. So it like hit me like a ton of bricks, and like all my friends, I never actually owned it, but all my friends did. So I heard it quite a bit back then. But I was just exactly the right age for this to nail me. But I remember seeing a documentary about a year and a half ago, and they interviewed their A&R guy. And, like, this record didn't...
Did he hear a single?
He heard lots of them. But, like, you know, he kept having to press Geffen to, like, push it more because, like, it didn't immediately hit. But what he noted, and I think this is totally true, is that, you know, fans of bands like Poison and Winger and Warrant and all that other crap would like this, as would fans of Metallica and Iron Maiden and stuff that was generally taken a little more seriously by, you know, your hardcore metal heads. Like, everybody could latch onto this.
Well, it's kind of raunchy, but also it's not too hard. It kind of reminds me of like early Motley Crue in the sense that like there's not as much artifice in there. There's a little bit of it, but again, like, we're like talking this album up big time.
Why don't you pick one to?
Sure. But I want to say before we do that, like, don't get me wrong. Like, this is by no stretch of the imagination my favorite album in the world. I'm surprised how much I ended up liking it. But well, let's do a song, and when we get back, let's listen to the other side of the coin. So why don't we just do the big single right now? Because I have two other songs I want to listen to that are off the beaten path. But let's do "Welcome to the Jungle." Yeah. super huge fan of that song in general. I feel like they push the beat way too much. Like, the drumming is just not that great on this record. Everybody else, I think all the other musicians are pretty... I feel like it's a pretty good sounding record overall. And no, it's a pretty good song. I feel like it's so hurried and, like, if they slowed it... I don't know what it is. Like, there's a lot of notes in there that it doesn't ever sink into like
you
a groove.
You want like the Recliners version of it where it's like croonery?
No. Okay, so a lot of the rest of this record, like, they actually do settle into a groove. Unfortunately, you have to like suffer. That one like seems like it could a little bit, or it could be faster and be like more of a punk song. I don't know what it is. Like, but that hook is undeniable. Like, the Welcome to the Jungle. Like, also, it's very evocative lyrically. Of course, then you have to deal with the shanananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananananan
kind of celebrating that L.A. cliche of, like, you know, boy from the sticks comes out and, like,
yeah,
know,
but
he's,
I mean,
caught up in this crazy lifestyle.
But it seems visceral to me overall. I don't necessarily love that song, but I look, man, this is, like, right about 6 months before, like, fucking Straight Outta Compton came out. They're giving street-level views of fucking dirty L.A., and, like, I can understand why people would be captivated by that shit, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, both sides of that coin.
Well, Axl Rose, like, leaves Indiana as William Bailey, and then by the time this record comes out, he's Axl Rose.
No.
Leather pants.
No, I mean, you're right about what you're saying, but I'm saying, like, you know, like, why gangster rap, like, a lot of people got initially, like, really drawn to it was to see, like, that seedy side of fucking, you know, South Central
in
LA.
This record, like, does the same thing just for white people.
Right. No, that's what I'm saying. But you get to see, it's a different kind of, like, gritty, seedy life from the street level view.
Mark, at some point you should pull up the original cover art for this record, and the retailers wouldn't stock it. Anyway, we don't have to go on and on about that. But I genuinely did that song, and it's a way to open a record.
Axl Rose kind of looks like Chucky from Tommy Boy.
Yeah, he's put on a little weight. But that's all right. You know, it happens with age. Here we go. Yeah, there's a, like, a chick, like, passed out in Skid Row with her panties
around
her ankles.
Yeah, that was on the inside of the CD.
Well, no, they ended up using it on the inside, but this was supposed to be on the cover. And, surprisingly, Walmart bucked.
Yeah, big surprise. Okay, boys, so tell us from the other side of the table. Mark, you had things to say.
So I don't know if I agree with the sound quality of even the three, like, hits that came off this album. I feel like this whole thing is really thin. I feel like the production of it was.
It does sound thin.
It's really poorly balanced. I think you've got some amazing artists playing some amazing, like, the guitar riffs are
incredible. It's a little mid-rangey. I wouldn't say thin as much as mid-range, but I definitely...
Well, it feels thin to me, I guess.
The drums sound really thin. Like, I think the bass and the heaviness of Slash's guitar sound pretty weighty.
So I'm guessing you would have liked more of, like, really a thin Zeppelin-style production than what we ended up with here, which is more of, like, your hair metal.
I don't know.
I agree with that to some degree.
You know, I can't cast my mind back to what albums were really coming out sounding like back then, but you know, filtered through today's lens, where you've got a lot more low end, in they really boost that bass
up a lot more.
They fired
the first guy that was doing it, and then I think they scrapped it and just started over.
I don't know. As I listened to this, and I would, you know, I did not latch on to the non-singles off of this album, but even when the singles came up, I felt underwhelmed by.
You just needed to EQ your boombox.
Well, I tried that.
Oh yeah. Okay.
I hear what you're saying. There's actually some the non-singles. Like, there's a couple on here for me personally. Again,
by the way, Spotify is missing a song on here. It's So Easy.
Yeah,
that's on this record, and it's not on Spotify.
I don't know. Maybe there's some reason. Fucking. Maybe there's some, like, licensing things. I mean, it's
got
to
be
what it,
like,
what
yeah,
it is.
Yeah, I haven't got a clue. Maybe Linda Ronstadt, like, sued them.
That's probably, no.
Yeah. Isn't that a Linda Ronstadt song? Dad would know. Kevin, what were your thoughts?
Yeah, I think it is. Well, it's probably fair to start with the admission that I've never connected with Guns N' Roses. I've never got why. I never, like, you know, obviously you move as many units as these guys did back in the day, and this record was everywhere and omnipresent. And it wasn't one of these deals where it's like I didn't get into it because, not to be one of the gang or any of that business. I just never connected with this sound. Like, I do hear the idea that there is this, the possibility of some connective tissue between fans of bands, the hair bands like Poison, and maybe a little bit of like approaching things with more heft, like you would end up seeing on the, you know, the more authentic takes by the flannel laden set. But ultimately, it feels a little bit more plastic to me. Like, I get the songcraft on the hits. Like, I totally think that, okay, they're well put together. I totally see why people like these. I get why they're played. But there is a fawning adoration for this band, and in particular this record. But certainly, like, they're just folks who have always just loved this band, and I just don't get it. I've never gotten it. So it is with that lens in mind that I did think it was really fascinating to read. Part of the Rolling Stone take on this was that that Appetite for Destruction was among the last classic rock records to be mastered with vinyl in mind, to be edited with a razor blade applied to, I'm quoting now, to be edited with a razor blade applied to 2-inch tape, to be mixed by five people frantically pushing faders at a non-automated mixing board. And then they talked to their producer and engineer, Mike Klink, and he said, "We use classic instruments and classic amps. Our approach is very reminiscent of stuff that was being done in the 60s and the early 70s. And the assistant mixing engineer, who they gave a credit on the record as Victor the fucking engineer on the album, said that it could also, he said it could almost be seen as one of the last of those types of records. From Layla to Abbey Road on down, it could be seen as the last great rock record made totally by hand. Now, if you're the engineer, I totally understand how that would, if that is physically what happened, why you would, and the record ended up being really big, I can see why that would be your opinion. But on the, you know, the flip side of that argument is I've also read things by pretty reputable writers that talked about the fact that, like, in the CD age, and this bridged like the last of some of the vinyl age with the advent of the real, you know, of people really getting into CDs.
This was right in the heart of like cassette time, like,
yeah,
and still some vinyl around, but like people were really switching over to CDs.
Well, the suggestion has been made that it was not only the last of the albums, but it was also the first, or the, you know, the vinyl forward albums. But it was also the first of these, how about a few hit songs and a bunch of filler CDs? And I can kind of see both sides of that argument. Mm-hmm. You know, part of the legend of this record was how fast these guys were blowing through their advances. Like, that's probably a little bit of a nugget of the music industry gone by, that, you know, you have this overnight sensation record of sorts that sells 15 million copies.
Oh, they didn't probably see, like, a dime of it for a while either.
Well, but still, like, you get these advances, and then they're living, you know, and they have the quote, air quotes, rock and roll ethos happening, where, you know, Slash is doing what Slash is doing, and, you know, Axl Rose looks like Axl Rose. Like, it's all this fucking mythology that has less to do with the music and more to do with the image.
Yeah, but I mean, you're totally right about that. But that's one thing about, like, rock and roll bands, and you can attribute that, like, back to Led Zeppelin or Black Sabbath or even to Elvis or whatever. Like, part of it, it's part and parcel, don't you think?
It's
like,
romanticized to,
oh sure,
go out and be a, like, crazy.
Well, they wanted the myth. They as artists before they got big, they wanted the myth, they were really upfront about that.
You know, I keep wanting to say, like, you know, but they lived it. But who gives a shit if you lived it or not? Like, live the fucking myth. Like, live the lie. I don't know.
You know, Steven Adler, their original drummer, like, that was on this record, he sued them because he said that they got him addicted to heroin and then fired him for being a heroin addict.
Yeah, and then he had a stroke from fucking smoking too much crack. So, which is a true thing. Let's listen to Mr. Brownstone. I like this song.
I love this song. I'm I'm all about that song, man. And like you guys keep saying, three singles. Weren't there four? Like this, Sweet Child of Mine, Welcome to the Jungle.
No, that was never a single. It was Welcome to the Jungle, Paradise City.
Oh, Paradise City
and Sweet Child of Mine.
Yeah, but Mr. Brown's, because like this was one that like my friends would always play. Like I heard as much as I heard any of the other singles.
Because it sounds like it should be a single. It's got a hook to it.
Well, and plus we were like 14, 15 years old, and none of us knew anybody who... Like
none of us knew anybody that did heroin.
Like, or at least we didn't know we did. We might have known like the guy down at the 7-Eleven or something. And
the guy, I love how you just pick like this. We might have known somebody like at the, I don't know. We might have known somebody down at like the HEB over off a.
What I'm saying is like even when I've known people who did heroin, I didn't know they were doing heroin at the time until I found out they were getting help. Like, oh, no shit, that guy did heroin? And, like, I just don't. And so, like.
Way to make it more, serious, all of us. Like, well, okay, Ryan has a very special episode. My point episode is
to like, a 15-year-old kid, like, hey, it's a song about heroin. Like, it made it more dangerous, which is when you're 15.
Like, sure, it all felt dangerous to me, personally. I don't know. Kevin, what you got?
Well, so this is really interesting. So I was digging into the Rolling Stone take on this, and they were talking about like kind of the, you know, and I do think that it's not really, it's not very, you would not call it very Pixies like, but there is a little bit of the loud soft dynamic that they employ from time to time. And an early manager of this band said of Axl Rose that he has this very likable little boy personality, and then he has this demon dog from hell personality. Vicky Hamilton, an early manager, said, this is the weird thing about this. Then she says, the color of his eyes actually changes when he goes into this different person. And then they just leave it at that. Like
his eyes are like his mood ring?
I guess, yeah. Yeah.
I'll Which bet is he is convenient. The world's biggest pain in the ass to try to manage.
Don't you know?
He's like probably the world's biggest pain in the ass, period.
Period. Just to be around. I don't know, man. Like, I was reading that Rolling Stone article from 1991 earlier, and, like, he apparently was pleasant enough over lunch with a burger and some fries. But, like, most of that article is about, like, him showing up 2 hours late and provoking a riot in St. Louis and talking shit about, like, his home state fans and walking out before an encore in Salt Lake City because he thought the Mormons were boring and he didn't want to put anybody to sleep. He's just a dick.
James Hetfield, they went on tour together. James Hetfield was like crashing down doors to like go pick him up and beat the shit out of him because he kept doing that show after show after show. Like, cause
so like they were like the biggest of like the hair metal bands right before Nirvana hit. And I remember reading an interview with Kurt Cobain where he was like, I was hanging out in a bar and like I'm already a famous person, but I was just hanging out, having a drink, not bothering anybody. And in walks Axl Rose, and he's got an entourage of like six or seven people just surrounding him and like fawning, and he's got bodyguards and shit. And he's like, he doesn't need it. He just wants the attention.
Right.
And to me, like it was the two, it was like the, like, let's get rid of the bloated excess assholeness and move on to something new. And then of course, like we didn't entirely get rid of it, but it definitely turned.
We're never going to get rid of it.
I can say that I like you a lot more now that you don't run around with your entourage and bodyguards.
That's right.
Yeah, they all quit because I wasn't paying them.
Right. Hey, they were just dudes.
Let's do a few minutes with.
Okay.
Hey. So we talked about at the open of the show that David Bowie's still dead.
Yeah, we
did. Yeah. And so and folks have been reacting to that. I mean, it's not really news. They've been reacting to that milestone. Hallmark.
Memorializing.
They've been talking about today's date. It occurred to me, like when I was thinking about, like, I was like, what would be kind of a fun way to harken back at that it would be different than what we did when we did our retrospective after he passed away. And I remembered the Brazilian songwriter Su Jorge, who did the Life Aquatic with Steve Zissou soundtrack, and he does an amazing Portuguese version of Life on Mars. And so that's what we're going to do.
Muitas vezes o coração não consegue compreender o que a mente não faz questão, nem tem forças para obedecer. Quantos sonhos já destruí e deixei escapar das mãos. Se o futuro assim permitir, não pretendo viver em vão. Meu amor, não estamos sós, tem um mundo a esperar por nós. No infinito do céu azul pode ter vida em Marte, então vem cá, me dá sua língua. Então vem, eu quero abraçar você. Seu poder vem do sol. Minha medida, meu.
Yeah, so if you saw The Life Aquatic and you thought to yourself, hey, when Bowie dies, a couple of years after that happens, I'd really like to hear another song from that album, that's one of them. That's,
I saw
Life
that
on
movie
Mars
with you. And I don't remember that, but I could have been distracted.
No, that definitely wasn't in the movie.
Yeah, anyway.
Beautiful song, and like it proves the point, like good song is a good song is a good song. I don't have to understand
it. It is a beautiful song in any language, really.
Yeah, well, and you really notice things like sort of the progressions, the way that the
song
moves.
Yeah, like really cool.
Moves.
Well, he was playing bossa nova chords. He wasn't playing what Bowie was playing. Like, that whole song was completely reinterpreted.
Well, you would hope so, in a different language, I guess, to a certain extent.
No,
but
I'm talking
about
the chords that he was playing. Like,
Shane is like a bossa nova, like, savant.
Those are like Brazilian jazz chords. Like, not, those are definitely not. He was playing a lot of in-between chords in there that are not in that.
Well,
song.
Maybe I'm not articulating my point very well, because I'm not necessarily talking about the sort of the specifics of what he was playing versus the way that Bowie would play it. Only that when you don't, at least for me, when I don't speak the language, and you may be shocked to know that I don't speak Brazilian Portuguese, you find yourself noticing different things, like the way that the song breaks, and that's what I was picking
up.
Yeah,
the melody is the same, and the melody is absolutely beautiful, like just gorgeous. That's probably my favorite Bowie song.
It's well, and it's such a, his this Sue's voice is super rich, and a little bit of his backstory. He grew up in a town not far outside of Rio. And I guess when he was 19, ended up homeless and was that way for 3 or so years. But his music career flourished during that time. Like, I guess he just had time to play because, you know,
what else are you gonna do?
Didn't have rent.
Yeah.
So
he can fucking play, man.
No, he totally can. And I mean, again, it's like for a video that literally shows like almost nothing going on besides like just this guy in a sound booth playing. Yeah.
You know, recording engineer, and then he smokes a cigarette after.
Yeah, he was also Knockout Ned in City of God. So
it's a great fucking movie.
Yeah.
That is one that is on my list that I have not got around to yet. And I am wrong.
And has received praise from many of his fellow musicians, including Beck and David Bowie, per Wikipedia, which doesn't surprise me. If I were Bowie and I heard that version of my song, I'd be like, shit, yeah, sing it, dude.
Damn right, dude.
Yeah. So we can talk about the words. Anyway, yeah, so wanted to share that with you fellows today.
That was a good one.
It was apropos.
Well, I'm just waiting for his version of Welcome to the Jungle.
Yes.
Oh, his version?
Yeah.
It's sure a good idea. It'd
take 25 minutes. Yeah, I'm sure it's out there. Keep looking. The truth is out there.
All right, let's get back into it, kids.
Please.
GNR, bitches.
Welcome back to the jungle.
Yeah. Things are about to get dangerous.
Now you're making me want to hear the John Sebastian cover of Welcome to the Jungle.
What's that? Who's John Sebastian?
Welcome back.
Oh, he's doing Welcome Back, Potter. Yeah.
Welcome Cotter. Back to the jungle.
Welcome back, Potter. That
we
would have
got
been
fun and games.
Welcome back, Axel.
Does it shock you guys to believe that this band, around the time this record was being made, was by some accounts difficult to work with?
Okay, well, okay, volatile personalities, like talented volatile personalities, they got courted by a shit ton of major labels.
They were talented as fuck. Yeah, man.
These idiot asshole hormonal young people.
Yeah, but they were also were being taken drug out by addicts.
Drug addicts, also not a good like factor in that scenario. Were being taken to like Morton's Steakhouse and allowed to order whatever the fuck they wanted. In the hopes that somebody would land this thing because they had all this crazy buzz.
Look, dude, they were in their early 20s. I've seen dudes in their early 20s get way less than these guys have and act like they were fucking swinging dicks. You know, like, I'm not surprised at all.
No, like, people who, like, maybe get, like, a hundred people out to their show or something and, like, they think they conquered the local scene.
Yeah, like, I remember, like, seeing these... band will remain unnamed, but years ago, like this band who I knew, they were like, yeah, exactly. They had like 100 people come out to a show or something, and then he went to like South by Southwest, like, you know, where you check in and get your wristband. All four people in a band had sunglasses on with matching t-shirts. Like,
yeah, that's just,
but I mean,
hard to watch.
But I mean, also, like, you're talking about.
But like, these guys literally, like, kind of had the world at their disposal at this point. And yeah, they were.
Well, yeah, it was the mid to late 80s. But also that period of L.A. was so competitive. And these guys did a different thing. And they floated above all of this cutthroat. All these guys, like.
Well, one of the guys that we haven't brought up yet that I think that we should is Izzy Stradlin. He actually came from, if I'm not mistaken, it was Seattle.
He did come from Seattle.
And he played in, like, punk bands. And I think that the interplay between he and Slash is, like, what really set them apart.
It is, but Izzy Stradlin, also his writing. Like, he was the solid dude. He quit this band before, or in the middle of the Use Your Illusion, like, recording sessions.
I can imagine,
sure.
Like... I don't care how much money you're throwing at me. If I got to spend like all day with Axl Rose.
Yeah, no, he was a solid adult and he was like, nope, I'm out of here.
Yeah, I can't imagine. And it really, like, I don't know Slash at all. Like, maybe he was like a decent dude to be around, but the entire fucking band left them. And then how long did it take Axl Rose? Like, I guess he like legally like was able to retain the name as Guns N' Roses to put out Chinese Democracy. Like 15 years or some shit.
Yeah, and then he was like playing with a dude that had a fucking Kentucky Fried Chicken bucket on his head, and his name was Buckethead. Yeah.
So one quick point of order: Izzy Stradlin was one of Axl Rose's running buddies from Lafayette, Indiana. It was Duff McKagan that was from Seattle.
Okay.
And was playing.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. I knew that they had some sort of.
Well, he was a good player too.
But there was like a. Punk element of this band, and the bass
sounds badass all the way
through this record. That was the one thing that I, you know, whether or not you think the production's thin, I thought the bass playing was rock solid all the way through.
Well, and I can't speak for Mark; he's right here. But but I guess when we were talking about the record sounded a little bit thin, it wasn't because the notes weren't well executed. It just sounded like there was not. Like it misses, it's missing a richness to me. Like the,
yeah, it's
so.
Yeah, it's that depth is lacking. I agree.
You want to pick us another song to listen to?
Sure, man. Let's listen to. You know what? I like the last song, Rocket Queen, quite a bit, actually. I think that. And also, can I say.
Is that like an Elton John cover?
No.
Close. It's okay. Very close.
All right.
As a Coda lover. There are several songs on this album with codas, and this song is a song with a coda. However, I don't want to hear that. I just want to hear how stupid the goddamn lyrics are, but how brilliant the fucking hook in the beginning is with Sweet Child of Mine, of course. It's a brilliant little like guitar thing. It sounds great, and then goes into... maybe the worst lyrics I've ever heard in my life. And then like this weird, creepy fucking coda where it's like, where do we go? Wait, what? Like you were just talking about, her hair reminds you of a warm, safe place where as a child you lie. Thank good grammar there. And then all of a sudden, out of nowhere, where do we go now? Like, it gets creepy.
Qualify as a coda or more as a bridge?
I no, guess it's a coda. It's the very end.
Yeah, I guess it is.
It completely changes.
It just elongates. Like
no, it
like,
changes the entire song. It's a completely different part. It's at the very end of the song, and it goes out on it. It's a coda.
Right. Yeah, I imagine you're right. So which one are we listening to? We listen to
Sweet Child of Mine.
Okay.
Fighting about this?
I don't know.
Well, Kevin says coda. You say that they love they're coda people. He said that they're codependent, and I said coda dependent.
Yes.
Yes, that's pretty good.
It's a longer, it's a well, longer bumper sticker, but
as
sure.
a songwriter that enjoys codas, that was oh, what was that? Coda dependent was yeah, pretty good. I mean, look, the music on that song is great, but goddamn, those lyrics are fucking stupid, man.
Well, they are. What was it like? Her hair reminds me of a warm, safe place where
well, as a child, I lie.
As a child, I'd hide and pray for the thunder and the rain to quietly pass me by. Her hair reminds him of that.
Yes. Yeah. Where everything.
Like every time I've been really digging into a chick and I see her hair, I think of like wistfully of a time that I used to go hide
it's
from the pain.
It's just so goddamn dumb. Now and then when I see her face, she takes me away to that special place. And if I stared too long, I'd probably break down and cry.
Cry yai.
Cry yai.
Cry yai.
But on the lyrics, it's just cry. We're reading
sure.
the lyrics
oh, sure.
that producer Mark pulled up for
yeah.
us.
When in reality, he'd probably just flip out and like hit somebody.
And then wait for like 8 hours to show up and sing that song.
Yeah. I do think it's a good song. It's the first song I knew from this record. Like friends of mine were like, dude, you got to hear this. And I think it was the first single, but anyway, they were like that fucking opening guitar hook, like that is an earworm of earworms.
Yeah, dude, the whole song is pretty good. I mean, again, just get his goddamn voice and his goddamn lyrics out of it, and it's not so bad.
But they were this was like
unfortunately,
right when
that
they
was
when
important.
They, that this song was like their rocket. This song was like their rocket fuel to like you know this like kind of. Rock bloated stardom or whatever to the point like the next year was when the Chili Peppers were still kind of considered like an underground band or whatever and they put out a, I know
exactly.
you don't like them yeah. everybody gives me guff about them because I like one album
no it's just because you sound like
but,
an old man like
fine I don't care I have a point to make they had a song on Mother's Milk which again the one Chili Peppers record I like and the punk kids were all into the Chili Peppers and then they fucking went and blew it all once they
somebody
they
told Anthony Kiedis he should sing ballads
really
yeah,
like an
over and
man.
Over and over again
yeah.
However on Mother's Milk
Chili Peppers used to be good
it's really just one record that I like but anyhow they have a song on Mother's Milk where they're like you're like, put us on MTV, all we really need, begging on our knees, please, 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 which is ironic because later they became famous
dude,
largely.
You, I swear to God, but, you sound like somebody's dad that's like complaining
but
about like their favorite
the
country.
Outro like, to that particular song is them doing like a blistering little doo-doo-doo, doo-doo, like just lampooning Guns N' Roses, who, you know, to my teenage ears at the time, it was like, yeah, fuck those guys. These guys are the real deal. And then, of course, like, Chili Peppers ended up being exactly the same thing. But anyway, it's a fucking earworm. Like, I can't deny it. I don't know what Shane's like playing Tetris on his phone or something right now.
Well, look, I already said what I had to say. It was just funny. Just you got really into that.
But you know what? Well, people, they said this about Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hey, just get off my lawn, dude.
Oh, my God. I'm totally a get off my lawn guy to my neighbors. Okay. Anyway, by the way, thank you guys for listening to Appetite for Destruction. And Kevin, what you got for a current affair?
I don't have a current affair. I did the middle.
Shit. It's like, never mind. Ryan does.
A current affair.
I was just looking at Kevin, and he's got this cool, like, Astros.
He's got Crush City with, like, 8-bit video game graphics on it. Kevin visited the Astros.
I got a picture taken with the trophy today. Yeah, that totally happened.
Yeah, I totally wish and I had gone. I was otherwise occupied.
Yeah, but we'll tell stories about that later. But yeah.
But anyway, I heard a great song. Thank God it came out within the last year, but it's by a band called The Preachers, but it's essentially take the C out of Creatures and replace it with a P, and that's how you spell it. But the song is called Girlhood. So let's get into that. Nobody moves. It's a movie. How do I look now? Am I a beauty? Whatever makes me a modern girl. Nothing makes me a modern girl. Fantasy rules and it's there in my room. Yeah, I tear myself apart for kicks. For you. Whatever makes me a modern girl. Nothing makes me a modern girl. Hey! Shaky, freaky mirrors. Keep me up all night. Turns out they're from Australia, but yeah, Preachers with Girlhood. And can I just pose a question to the room? Is anybody surprised that I like that song?
No, that song's great.
Not even slightly. That song was fucking awesome, man.
No, it's great.
Yeah,
I
love that song.
Yeah.
But you know what? But
they're like the Australian Liz Phair or something. Well, like back in her
but
prime.
Better.
Yeah.
That, I was yeah. So I was thinking, like, when I was listening to that, I was like, these guys, Liz Phair is a great example. They're right on the precipice of stuff that, like, I really like. But if it, like, lists this way or lists this way, it goes into territory that's just a little too much. So I'm like, it's, but the writing
it's
was really good.
It's a pop song, but it's a little garagey, but it's
but
not
it's, but
too,
it's not too garagey.
No.
It's a little no. like.
That garage door is open.
It's not. It's like a little Jesse.
It's just a one-car garage.
Not as sneery. Yes.
Yeah.
What'd you say?
It's that garage door is open. Mark said it's a one car garage.
Just
so we're
let some air
yeah.
to
yeah.
breathe.
Yeah, you want
a well ventilated garage.
You want it to circulate. Yeah.
Dude,
that's all.
I love that fucking song. That was awesome.
Oh yeah, yeah. I had an errands to run today, and that came on. And, hey, weekly KUTX plug. Like, yeah. Came on.
KUTX
and I was like, Shazam.
Rules,
by the way,
dude.
Shazam is like the greatest app in the world, especially like if yeah. you're busy and you're like, I have to
dude,
know what KUTX that is.
KUTX is yeah. like the greatest radio station in the world because it's not completely curated in a way that's like, this is what you're gonna like. You can listen to it and sometimes you're like, I fucking hate this song, and you go back and you're like, oh wait, I love this. I would never hear this.
No,
like,
it was Lori Gallardo who played this, and I know her a little bit. She's super cool.
She's
and
very cool, but
like, she got to pick this though. Like,
yeah, I know, but yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, having it's like KXP in Seattle, like having a radio station that's completely dedicated to music. That's it's it's not curated based solely on what their algorithm thinks your musical choices are going to be. Gives me the choice to listen to a radio station where like I could be like one second I'm like, oh holy shit, it's fucking, you know.
Well, in some community based radio stations, like sometimes the stuff will be like way out there, but like they just kind of.
So is this sometimes?
Sometimes
I hate it. Oftentimes yeah. I do. But, you know, but then I get to go back and.
But
I'm
it's
like,
always one that
I never would have heard of this song before had it not been for, like, a community-supported public radio.
I thought you were going to say, like, community service. I had to do.
Well, we'll talk about my community service one of these days.
Spent like, 14 hours listening to really cool songs.
One time I worked community service. And
my dad's
and
been paid.
I had to go cut, like, branches off the side of the road. And the guy that I was cutting him off, I was in high school, I was 14, right before high school. And he's like, what are you in here for? And I was like, we were like chained together. Long story. And I was like, I had an MIP. And I was like, what are you in here for? He's like, I murdered my wife and her father with a chainsaw.
I was going to joke and go like, murder. Like, literally.
Yeah, that is a very...
So I was like, no, put a kid with a beard. Get me out of these handcuffs on my ankles.
And then he started laughing.
No, he had a chainsaw. But, yeah.
Was so. He... Did you?
That's a
find out
frightening story.
Like, no, he wasn't.
Oh, lovely.
Because I had to do that for 4 weeks.
You would think the penal system would have a better handle.
Oh, and the dude that brought me to... Anyway, well, the dude that brought me to work, this old guy, he would like... he would fill up this like big styrofoam cup with ice and beer. He's like... And he's like the guy that worked for the county that was giving me a ride. He's like, you know why I drink beer on ice at like 6 o'clock in the morning? And I was like... You shouldn't be drinking beer at all. And he goes, I learned how to do it in NAM because NAM beer gets hot over there. So anyway, if I could leave you guys with
anything.
Thank
you for that diversion.
If I could leave you guys with anything.
Words of wisdom right there, man. If you're ever in NAM,
it's this. Like,
ice
NAM,
your beer.
Ice your beer down.
Okay.
Or drink it first thing in the morning.
Well, no, because it was first thing in the morning, Mark. And Ryan, what do you got for us next week?
I've got a record by a fellow that comes up occasionally.
Ted Nugent? Please.
No, it's Lou Reed's 1989 album New York, which I've never heard all the way through.
What's it about?
Probably drugs and grit.
Yeah.
Or New York.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
But anyway, I don't know if everybody, Shane, have you heard it all the way through?
I've never heard it, but I'm not. Can I posit this question to this room? Is anyone surprised in the least bit that Ryan picked Lou Reed for one of his album choices?
No, but I think I've told my Lou Reed story, but I'll save that for next week. We can rehash it.
Yeah, do. Yeah. I didn't pick a Velvet Underground. I mean, I know most of that shit. So
I know, I mean, but come on.
I want to be able to talk about Lou Reed.
It's right in your wheelhouse.
Okay.
So, yeah. And anyhow...
All right, well, till next week, I'm Kevin.
I'm Ryan.
I'm Shane.
And I'm Mark.
This is Somebody Likes It.